radio.
Arguments are not going to attract people. Winning is going to attract people.
Radio.
The Four People's Riot, as they call it, was necessary, it was reasonable, and it was just.
Radio.
And if you get in my way to make sure that our man gets housing, or that he gets enough to eat, I will move you.
Radio.
Okay.
Hello and welcome to OCAP Radio for this is Friday, February 5th, 2010, here on CKLN 88.1. Welcome to our show for the evening. On this week's show, our first segment is going to be the history of the Take Back the Land movement in Miami, Florida. Kelly Bentley will be bringing you that. In our second segment, we'll be playing a recording of Max Rameau. He came last year speaking, and he spoke at the OCAP event called Power of the People, Community Responses to Capitalism in Crisis, held in Toronto last March. And in our third segment, we'll be discussing the upcoming annual No More Silence demo held on February 14th each year. Now, before I go into Kelly Bentley's history, I'd like to mention, as I do every week, that OCAP is happy to accept donations and monthly sustainers to keep the organization going. If you would like to do that, you can log on to ocap.ca and take a look at the different ways to help fund OCAP. Now over to you, Kelly.
Okay. So I'm going to talk about the history of Take Back the Land, and here I go. On October 23rd, 2006, a group of homeless people and local activists took over a vacant lot on the corner of 67th Street and Northwest 17th Avenue, jointly owned by the City of Miami and Miami-Dade County, and erected tents. They planted a sign exclaiming the emphasis and name of the movement, Take Back the Land. Since then, the Umoja Village shantytown, which takes its name from the Swahili word umoja or unity, has grown into a self-sustaining community housing 50 otherwise homeless people. The village included approximately 20 wood frame structures, multiple duplex-style housing units built from wooden pallets, a fully functional kitchen, two porta-potties, and a shower powered by an elevated water container. Residents were trained to run the village themselves, and it voted on all aspects of village life. While the mass media has celebrated what they have coined the development boom, the black community has been struggling to retain their homes amidst the raised rents and deteriorating living conditions. Miami has experienced a shift from being the haven for affordable retirement to being the center of land-based wealth building. The tens of millions of dollars designated by the county and city governments for low-income housing development was instead distributed to wealthy developers to create luxury condominiums that would attract wealthy investors outside of the community. Consequently, the black community has been enduring gentrification, the forced removal and replacement of low-income residents by wealthier people. When the mass media issued reports on the corruption of government officials and their shady dealings with certain developers, the general public was outraged and a political opportunity was created to take back the land. Through the allowance of the Portager Settlement Agreement, the Take Back the Land movement set up temporary structures that would enable previously homeless people to conduct activities such as eating, sleeping, and other life-sustaining activities. The Take Back the Land movement is based on several theoretical assumptions. First, the movement is fundamentally about land. Black people have the right to control land in their own community and to use it for the public good. Second, the government is an integral part of the problem. Therefore, it cannot be depended upon to shape the solution. And finally, development is not about buildings, paved streets, or technologies. True development is about the lives and potential of actual people. The political component of Take Back the Land is led by an all-black decision-making group. It is crucial that the movement to empower the black community is led by members of that community. However, the organizers of the movement also understood the importance of collaborating with other concerned parties and sought the support of Lake Worth Global Justice, a group of mostly young white people concerned with globalization, environmental, and land issues. Since the inception of the Umoja Village, the Take Back the Land movement has organized a rally to call for hands off the Umoja Village, initiated a Week Against Gentrification campaigns in order to challenge local governments and raise consciousness in the larger Miami community to the failures of the governing officials. Take Back the Land has been subject of national and international media coverage, inspired local college students to volunteer, study the impacts of gentrification, and build a mock shanty town at FIU. So what we're going to go into now is we're going to go into a clip. It's Max Rameau. He's talking about the erection of the Umoja Village in 2006. And then after that, I'll go into a short history about what's happened since then.
This is Max Rameau. I'm with a group called Take Back the Land in Miami. I want to thank all of you for being here. And, of course, thank OCAP for putting this wonderful event together. We're here now, of course, because we're entering a rare moment in history, and it's critically important that we understand the moment that we're coming into and what its implications are so that we can maximize the benefit of this moment, maximize the opportunity that this moment represents for people, for human beings, for history. So history advances when there are these huge social clashes, when there are these forces in society that clash against one another, and the end result of that clash is a new society or a new portion of society. And the bigger the clash, the bigger the potential for the change. And we are headed, I think, for a big clash. And while it's difficult to contextualize and understand the times that we're in when we're in the middle of them and all of these things are swirling around us, it's important that we do so, because only when we properly understand and contextualize what's going on around us can we organize properly given the time. And we need to organize properly given the time. No group of oppressed or exploited people has ever tripped over their oppression and fallen into liberation. Liberation doesn't happen accidentally. Liberation happens through organization. And it's important that if you want to end oppression and exploitation, or you say that you want to end oppression and exploitation, that you join an organization that is ending exploitation or oppression. If you're not joining a member of an organization that's ending exploitation or oppression, you're not really for the end of exploitation. That said, we're entering into a major time of social clash. There's a huge looming crisis, and that crisis will result in a clash, and the result of that clash will be a new reconfigured society in one direction or another. Up to this point, there have been three huge social clashes in the United States. The first was the Civil War, which resulted in Reconstruction, which changed society significantly in the United States. The second was the Great Depression, which resulted in the New Deal, which changed fundamentally what labor meant in the United States. And the third, the most recent, was the Civil Rights Movement, which was centered around the way the society deals with and relates to black people. And the result of that was the desegregation, not integration, but desegregation, and the Great Society. Take Back the Land asserts that we are entering into the fourth major clash in U.S. history. And that fourth major clash is predicated upon the economic crisis that we're in right now. There will be a huge clash based on that crisis, and there will be a new society at the end of it. So this is a significant chance for us to alter not only the society on this continent, but really the global society, because this is a global crisis, and this is going to happen around the world, and we must take advantage of this time. And this global crisis, we assert, is based on land. The crisis was largely predicated on the corrupt and wrong relationships between people, government, corporations, and land, and we think therefore the clash will fundamentally be about land, and therefore the end result will be a fundamental change in the way people think about land. So why is it important for us to understand this conflict in terms of land, and what does that mean? To understand this clash properly, we will slightly go off track and produce a change that we ultimately do not want. The fundamental issue here at stake, we assert, is land. We are going to be tricked and fooled and cajoled into thinking that the fundamental issue here is housing. And the system is therefore going to say, sure, we'll build 500 more units of housing, and then we will all declare victory. But we will not fundamentally change the relationship between people and land. In the end, these corporations will still own just the same amount of land that they own now, and the individuals will have control over just the same amount of land as we have now, which is not nearly enough. Consequently, we need to understand the core issue, which is land, and we need to work on dealing with the core issue and solving the core issue. The second reason why this is important is because there's no guaranteed outcome at the end of this clash. At the end of this class, society will be extremely different, but it can either be extremely different to the left, making a hard turn to the left, or it can be extremely different by making a hard turn to the right. And only properly understanding the times that we're in can ensure that we'll make a turn in the right direction. The nature of this crisis that we talked about is fundamentally about land, but the manifestation of the problem has been in housing. What people are talking about in housing, or the way we see the problems with land, has been in the area of housing. The clash on a real level is happening between two rights, or at least perceived rights. On one side, we have the right of human beings to have housing. And on the other side, we have the right, or perceived right, of corporations to make a profit. If all human beings have a right to housing, then that inhibits the corporation's ability to maximize their profit. And conversely, if corporations are allowed to maximize their profit as they've been doing, then that limits the ability of human beings to have housing. In every society, there are clashes between rights. This society and every society is going to have to resolve this conflict. Take Back the Land asserts that the right of human beings to housing supersedes the right of corporations to profit. And when we have to choose between the two, we choose the right of human beings to housing over the right of corporations to make a profit. We will see this play out as this clash begins. I think John had it right that on the government side, on the right side, the attempt to make a hard turn to the right is going to be these vicious austerity measures, which they're going to say are necessary because there's no more money. There's no more money, of course, because they gave it all to the corporations. But they're going to have on the right turn is going to be the vicious austerity measures, but the proper turn is going to be elevating housing to the level of human rights rather than keeping it where it is, which is in the market. So we set out to assert that human beings have a right to housing and that right to housing supersedes the right of corporations to make a profit, and we attempted to prove that assertion by taking over land. Since the Emoja Village fell to a fire, Take Back the Land has been identifying vacant government-owned and foreclosed homes. We break into those homes and we move homeless people into peopleless homes.
Okay, so that was actually our clip. Max Rameau came and he spoke at an OCAP event that we had last March called Power of the People, Community Responses to Capitalism in Crisis. And in his speech, as you heard, he discussed the crisis of capitalism and how that relates to the struggle and organizing over land. So what we're going to do now is we will go to music, and after that we will play the clip that we were supposed to play with Max speaking about the Umoja village that had been erected. Okay, so the next song we will have will be Fight to Win from Femi Kuti.
There is suffering in the streets, in the streets. Our leaders say, let it be, let it be. We the people don't agree. For this suffering, there is no need. But they'll wait until there's a revolution, revolution everywhere. Burning of property, more homeless people lying in the streets.
So forget about your wealth, won't you just get up and hail? The vote history repeats itself.
People cry in vain. We beg our leaders to see reason, to show a little pity. For this suffering, there is no need. But they'll wait until there's a revolution.
They want revolution everywhere.
Burning of property.
More homeless people.
matter how many years it will take. No matter how many years it will take. No matter how many years it will take.
Forget about you, well, won't you just get up and put yourself to the strength? He's itself
tonight. We'll look for
if you tired of the mind and you want to change his master plan. Want somebody in the hand, fight to win.
Come on, come on.
So forget about you, well, won't you just get up and set up? No history repeats itself.
Okay, so in the second clip, we will now hear Max Rameau and Amanda Seaton from Take Back the Land talking about the creation of the Umoja Village in Liberty City, Miami in 2006.
First of all, in South Florida, it's been one of the worst cases of gentrification and affordable housing crisis in the United States. So it's very, very hard here to find affordable housing. So in this area in particular, there are lots of apartments and homes which are doubled and tripled up, two or three families living in a house which is designed to hold one. So on top of that, the county, Miami-Dade County, has been exposed in a scandal where tens of millions of dollars are supposed to go to build housing for low-income people was given in sweetheart deals to developers, where they've been connected to developers, obviously, and also something just outright stolen. So while people generally think that you would go to the government to create affordable housing during an affordable housing crisis, the government has actually been decreasing the number of affordable housing units, artificially suppressing the number of affordable housing units. So they've been making the crisis much worse rather than much better. So people have obviously been very angry and very distrustful of the government. We just took it to the next step, which is to say we're not going to them to solve our problems. We're going to do it ourselves.
This is a shanty town that was erected a week and 3 days ago in response to the housing crisis here in Miami-Dade. About 2 months ago in August, a housing scandal erupted. $80 million have been stolen from public housing.
It's hard to get them up.
It's been, you know, over a month. None of the money has been recuperated yet. No changes have been made. And basically, you know, folks are tired. They see low-income housing torn down all over their community. And instead of building public housing, low-income housing, the government's basically more interested in building condominiums. And this land is public land. There was apartments here 5 years ago that were affordable, that were torn down. You know, nothing's been done with the land. Supposed to have been developed for the past 5 years. There's actually another scandal here with $10 million was supposed to be spent. So it's just basically live online. Folks in the community got together and decided that enough is enough and we have to fight back, take back the land. So all the shanties you see here are for people that don't have anywhere else to stay. And our demands are basically just that folks leave us alone so we can build a community here and build housing. If they told us, okay, we're going to build housing here so y'all can leave. They're supposed to have been building housing here for 5 years. There's empty plots all over that they're supposed to have been building housing on. We can't more and more empty promises. And we feel like a guarantee from the government basically right now means nothing, or from the county here. Right now we just want to keep on building more shanties. You know, as soon as we build them, more folks come to fill them. And, you know, hopefully eventually build something a little more permanent for the community here.
Okay. We're going to continue to build out. Back here we have the men's section here, where we have 7 or 8 units. We're going to continue to build out here. And then over here is the women's section. You can see where the few units under construction. We're going to continue to build out here. We have a bathroom. We're building a shower. We have a kitchen over here. We have a grill. We're just going to continue to build out. We have communal space, which is what we're standing on. We're going to have nightly meetings comes here, maybe not every night right away, but they will, once a week we'll have poetry, once a week we'll have political meetings, once a week we'll have this, we'll have that. So this is going to be space used by the community. We're going to build it out as much as we can, and we're going to continue to squatter this land until there's no more homeless people.
Right now there's about like 9 or 10 residents, homeless people, and then also some volunteers. Let's see if I can do.
I'm homeless, and he's the only people who really looked out for me, showed me love, you know what I mean? So I volunteered help with their own.
So one of the big things that we thought was that this would not work if it was like any other social service agency where we did everything and then delivered it to the residents. So we thought an integral part of this was that the residents had to participate in it, and they ultimately had to run their own city so that we would not have to be here all the time. They had the activists and volunteers there. So last night, in fact, which was our ninth or tenth day here, all the activists left and the residents ran the place themselves. So this is well moving towards the place being run by the residents.
I'm happy,
Okay, so an update on what's happened there is on April 26, 2007, the Umojo village burned down to the ground in a mysterious fire. There were no casualties or injuries. Miami police arrested 11 residents and activists for attempting to remain on the land, and the city erected a barbed wire fence around the property that same day. But since then, since October 2007, Take Back the Land announced it identified vacant public and private foreclosed homes and moved families into some of those homes in a move it calls liberating housing. As of February 2008, Take Back the Land has a waiting list of 14 families waiting to move into one of those homes. So now we're going to go to a quick song, and it's called Shanty Town from Desmond Kecker.
Welcome back to OCAP Radio. Next, we're going to talk about the No More Silence Network. It's a campaign to break through societal indifference towards the murder and disappearance of Indigenous women on Turtle Island. According to StatsCan, young Indigenous women are 5 times more likely than other women of the same age to die as a result of violence. The problem is so prevalent that Amnesty International considers it a crisis and maintains that significant unacceptable gaps remain in the protections afforded Indigenous women in Canada. An Amnesty 2004 report entitled Stolen Sisters, Discrimination and Violence Against Indigenous Women in Canada asks the unfortunate but necessary question, how many more sisters and daughters do we have to lose? The report says, Indigenous women have long struggled to draw attention to violence within their own families and communities. Canadian police and public officials have also long been aware of a pattern of racist violence against Indigenous women in Canadian cities, but have done little to prevent it. According to Amnesty, this pattern looks like this. Racist and sexist stereotypes deny the dignity and worth of Indigenous women, encouraging some men to feel that they can get away with acts of hatred against them. Decades of government policy have impoverished and broken apart Indigenous families and communities, leaving many Indigenous women and girls extremely vulnerable to exploitation and attack. Many police forces have failed to institute necessary measures such as training, protocols, and accountability mechanisms to ensure that officers understand and respect the indigenous communities they serve. Without such measures, police too often fail to do all they can to ensure the safety of indigenous women and girls whose lives are in danger. So in light of this information, please come out and support the 5th annual rally for our missing sisters. That'll be next Sunday, February 14th at 12 noon at the police headquarters at 40 College Street at Bay here in Toronto. After the rally at the headquarters, we'll be marching to the coroner's office at 26 Grenville Street and gathering with food immediately to follow at the U of T Center for People and for Women and Trans People at 563 Spadina Avenue. Over 500 Indigenous women have been murdered or gone missing, most over the last 30 years, on Turtle Island. We come together in defense of our lives and to demonstrate against the complicity of the state in the ongoing genocide of Indigenous women and the impunity of state institutions and actors, those like the police, RCMP, coroner's offices, and the courts, that prevents justice for all Indigenous people. If your organization would like to endorse or support this rally in other ways, please contact nomoresilence@riseup.net. And No More Silence is part of an inter- and national network to support the work being done by activists, academics, researchers, agencies, and communities to stop the murders and disappearances of Indigenous women. In addition to the Toronto rally, marches and other events will take place or have taken place in Vancouver, Victoria, Winnipeg, Calgary, Edmonton, Sudbury, and London, Ontario. Well, that's it for our show tonight on OCAP Radio, CKLN 88.1. We'd like to thank Mark for our continuous teching and Susie for her help in programming our show. And don't forget to visit OCAP.ca for more information and to help help sustain OCAP. Thanks and good night.
Good night.